How did floor hockey go today, Ian?
Hey, okay, first of all, it's ball hockey. All right, if we're going to call it anything, you need to call it that.
What the hell is the difference between floor hockey and ball hockey?
Well, floor is like you're inside, you know? There's a little bit of, you know, I played outside when it was like 1 degree and
so the difference is a roof?
Yeah, sure, I don't know, but it went good. I scored a goal. I deflected one off my wrist and into the net, and I love always wearing my Fitbit because I burned 4,000 calories and I ran 7 miles.
That's so amazing. That is amazing. Yeah. That's awesome. Good for you, dude.
Yeah, I feel great.
So you did leave out whether it was a win or a loss.
It was. We played 6 10-minute periods over a period of 2 or 3 hours, and we won. I don't remember the score. It was like 9-6. And then we played a bonus period, and we won that one. And we had 4 people, and the other team had 5. So.
Oh, okay. So you basically dominated on the PK over 2 hours.
Essentially, yeah.
Good for you, dude. Congratulations. And let me just throw this out there. I thought that the NBC4 segment featuring Ethan, but also with the cameo appearance by you, was absolutely wonderful. Did you enjoy making that? I know you said you were like sleep deprived, but man, I think you slayed it.
Well, the night before I didn't sleep because Ethan's teething. He's having like his molars come in, and I stayed up until like 3:30 a.m. cleaning the basement, which, you know, any rational human being would be like, well, Ian, why didn't you do that earlier in the day? And I don't really have an answer, but I thought it went really, really well. I think, you know, me knowing the material they had, I thought it was A+. And, you know, I don't think anyone can really completely understand how scary it is to kind of put how people will perceive you into other people's hands. And then on top of that, you know, like I've lost like 40 pounds over the last like 5 or 6 months, but yeah. You know, I still hate looking at myself completely. And so it's just like, it's nerve-wracking, you know, but I was watching it, I was down in Ashley's parents' basement in Germantown because our power went out, and I heard them like screaming when like Ethan came out like upstairs, and they're really demure, like very professional people. So to have her parents like screaming was really cute. And I just thought it was really cool. You know, like they really put a ton of effort into it, and they did it in a day. I was just really amazed by the turnaround of that. And, you know, I'm just really proud of, you know, I didn't sound like a complete idiot. You remember when I first started and I did not have a ton of confidence. I didn't feel very articulate. And like now I definitely feel that, you know?
You definitely acquitted yourself very well. And I totally agree. Like the production value was wonderful. I was so hoping that like they went from that, like there's never a non-awkward Gary Bettman interview, but that one was probably especially excruciating in the run-up to the game. And I was hoping that they would bounce right from Gary Bettman to Russian Machine segment.
No.
For the biggest clash possible.
Instead they had Deadly Hamsas leave the interview really awkwardly and have Gary and Ted wandering in the background going back and forth. I was losing my S.
Said that night that that the league did a wonderful job. Like I really thought that it was a well put on event, and I think everyone who was there had a ball. And as much as Toronto stunk up the joint, I thought the ice was really good and the quality of the play was really good from the cap side. And
minus Wes Johnson.
Minus Wes Johnson, which was a crime. That PA announcer and beloved Shea Garoth voice actor wasn't there. But beyond that, I thought the Caps did a great job. The NBC4 like stand-in segments where they had Gary and they had, who else did they have? And Ted and
Maryland Governor Larry Hogan.
Oh wow, Harry.
They had Joe B there. John Walton.
No, that's right. And John Walton was there, and he was talking about. And then they had some. Did they have somebody from like maybe a curler or somebody from the women's hockey team?
Yeah, they did. Yeah, I think they had. They had 2 girls from the women's hockey team. I think I don't vividly recall. I think I recall that. But
I'm walking around town center looking for Miss Skorupa, and I have not yet seen her. I don't know where she's. I think she was just going to Boston. She's probably back up there. But it's cool as hell to be like within a couple of miles of a gold medal winner. That's not Michael Phelps. But I want to like say hi and congratulate her. But she's not around.
I DM'd her on Instagram.
You and did she respond?
She responded. I mean, yeah, she's like, I love the site. I was like, I asked her if I could give her a t-shirt. The yes. Maryland is for champions one, or the book. Nice. Yeah, I forget what it is. I'm really brain dead right now, but yeah, she's really, really cool. She was yesterday. She was at the DC, not Armory, but the DC like convention center with NBC4, because they mm-hmm. had their like health kick convention thing. So
the Walter E. Washington Convention Center.
Yes, thank you.
It's like 5 blocks north of Chinatown of the I would say Verizon Center, Capital One Arena.
When were you at the Capitals convention when, or maybe it was just me and Chris?
No.
We were at Capitals convention and Barack Obama drove by and like people were trying to like keep us inside the convention center. I don't know. That was really cool.
Why?
Random story.
Do they even do the CapsCon? No, they do like a fan fest outside of Kettler now, right?
No, they don't do a convention at all. No. Yeah, I mean, they do a fan fest, but it's like 200 people and stuff. And
they're fun. I usually go to that. I was saying, like, when you're talking about giving Miss Skrupa a shirt, I checked in with my mom yesterday, and she was wearing a Rush Machine shirt. And I was like, she's like, you know, it's wonderful that you did this. I was like, okay, but for the record, I had literally nothing. It's the really cool rainbow one. I was like, just for the record, I had zero to do with this. I didn't even know about it. It just went live. And I'm like, that's a wonderful gesture. And you know, you guys did a great job with it. I had nothing to do with it. I know that kind of sounds like I'm like against LGBT rights. I'm not. I just had nothing to do with this shirt because I am in a hellhole at work. Would you like to talk about Cats Hockey?
Oh, I do. So bad.
All right. Let's get into it.
And now it's time for the RMNB podcast.
We've got three topics on the docket today. The first and least pressing, but fun to argue about, although I don't think there's much to argue about today, is the goalie drama. Braden Holtby has been shelved, at least for the moment, in favor of Philip Grubauer, who just straight up put out a shutout last night against the San Jose Sharks. And I guess I want to know, Ian, do you think it was the right move for Barry Trotz to give Holtby this break, or do you think I'm even being like overly charitable in phrasing it as like a rest or a reset? I think Trotz called it a reset.
Yeah, he called it a reset. You know, for someone who gets so many things wrong just completely and utterly, he's handled this really almost perfectly, I feel like. And when you have a great goaltending coach like Mitch Korn there, I think, you know, they're very sensitive about his feelings, which they need to be, because I think on top of, you know, it being a hard position, it's also a very emotional position. And you know, you can kind of tell that Holtby kind of was wilting a little bit. I think that he's probably had some beefs with the way players are playing in front of him. I mean, we've heard about several blowups in the locker room from him. So I think a reset was needed, and I think the Capitals have that luxury of turning to a guy like Philip Grubauer, who, you know, on almost any other team, he'd be the starter and he'd be great. And, you know, he kind of has a little bit of a, you know, Holtby's aggressive and very athletic, whereas Grubauer is also very athletic, but he's a bigger body. And so, and he's a lot longer. So I think in some ways he's a lot more suited sometimes for this team, like this iteration of the Capitals, because they give up so many high danger scoring chances. But I think they've handled it really well. You know, and I think goalie is a streaky position, you know, and, you know, Holtby, I just loved watching him be the happiest guy on the ice last night and kiss Grubauer on the helmet, because I mean, that's what kind of guy he is. That's what kind of teammate he is. And he only cares about winning. I mean, every time they ask him about like the All-Star game and being not there, he's like, I don't care. You know, he's like, you know, I have bigger goals than mine. So, you know, I'm not too worried about it.
I completely agree about the way that Trotz handled it. I think he did a wonderful job, and he's been very gracious in how he's described it. And as much as it was news, and I think you did a good job like covering that like post game celebration, I was also not at all surprised by it. Like it did not shock me that Holtby was bursting with joy that the Capitals got their second shutout of the season and both of them belong to the backup. I guess I totally agree that the recent events merited arrest for Holtby. And I think that like when I get into spats about this with folks, what I quibble with is the when, because I don't think that I would agree that Holtby had been bad in his performance up until really recently. I would say mediocre for a few months, but not below average. And until very, very recently, like early February, you know, for 1 month, really, I think he's been markedly below average, especially in the high danger shots, which just happen to also be the kinds of shots that the Capitals are hemorrhaging of late. And so I think as much as Holtby saved the team's bacon, especially in October and November, while Grubauer is having a rough go of it, and then he had a long stretch, I would say, you know, December and January and part into the beginning of February, I think he was just an average goaltender. And then I don't know what happened. It may have just been that wonderful Brent Johnson tweet thread that he did right before he went surfing was about how Holtby just did with just that many shots he's facing, that fatigue has to set in. And that same principle, I think, has to apply to guys like John Carlson and Brooks Orpik, who are playing tons and tons of ice, and that you got to pay for that at some point, and you hope that you pay for it in July when you're in the off season rather than, let's say, April. But yeah, like and Grubauer got a shot last night on, I think it was like 24 shots, and man, he was excellent. But it has to be said that was one of the better defensive performances of the Capitals of late. Like they did a darn good job. And I looked it up, and I put this on the Patreon a little bit ago. Grubauer has two shutouts. Last night was essentially the third easiest goalie game of the season, meaning like number of shots, number of high danger shots, number of expected goals, just the workload that the goalie would have. Of the top five, just one of them belongs to Grubauer, and it was last night, the shutout. The other four of the top five belonged to Holtby, and he didn't have shutouts in any of them. And you know, and a bunch of them gave up, you know, two goals. So yeah, that speaks to the mediocrity that we've seen from Holtby of late. The other Grubauer shutout was on December 27th against the Rangers. And I had to look this one up. I'm not sure that I did the recap or not, but this was that 1-0 shutout loss right after Christmas. And,
oh, yeah.
Like, and Holtby, Grubauer must have faced like nearly 40 shots. And the expected goals was like above four. And Grubauer kept him to zero. Like that was a superhuman performance to earn an L on your win-loss chart. And also record, like, how often do you see a shutout loss anyway? So, yeah, I'm well earned by Grubauer, especially he had just horrible goal support at the beginning of the season. I'm really happy to see him doing well. It kind of all comes back to, like, why on earth are both of these goalies playing for this team at the same time?
Yeah.
Like, these guys had a lot. Depending on what you think, like, we never really know what was going on in, like, the goalie trade market last summer. But you have to think that somebody had to make an offer somewhere to move those goalies because the Caps needed help, especially on defense in the offseason. And yet, you know, they're bringing both these guys who, like you said, could be starters anywhere.
Yeah.
And the last point I'll make is that having the backup take the majority of starts for a little while is not just a bad thing. It's also not a rare thing. Like, we see that happen in New York from time to time. I believe that's happened in Montreal. There were times in, where was Scott Darling last year? Detroit?
I don't know.
Or Chicago?
I think it was Chicago.
I think, okay. Like, we're he got starts over, and it was over Crawford then. It is not that weird for this to happen. And it's weird that the Capitals had gone, I guess, since really like 2013 without a goalie drama when they had the three-headed monster in that like midseason period under Oates. Anyway, what do you think?
Well, I kind of had two thoughts to that. Is that, you know, Brent Johnson really did nail, I think, a part of the situation. I think definitely fatigue is a part of it, but maybe it's more emotional fatigue. I think the thing is that being in that monster day to day with how many shots are given up, you know that Holtby is seeing guys take plays off or they're making mistakes. You start having all these things against certain players potentially. you know, you don't know, because that's more of a locker room thing. But I'm sure that just getting out of the day-to-day aspect of things will make him refreshed. You know, everybody can kind of be at a level playing field again. And if the defense can play better under Grubauer and they find their sea legs somewhat better, you know, I think Holtby will come back and it'll be a lot easier for him to challenge, for him to be himself. And so I thought that Brent Johnson third was really good, because, you know, I was kind of really down about the whole thing. And then I read the Brent Johnson thing and he was like, it's a good thing, you know? And, you know, I think sometimes the only people that really can completely understand these situations are goaltenders, because being a goaltender is just a very mentally fatiguing, emotionally fatiguing position, you know, and Holtby thinks he can stop every shot. So I can't imagine how he feels after giving up 5-6 goals. You know, I think there was a stretch where he gave up, what, like almost 25 in 4 games. I mean, that's not him. So I think one other point.
Go ahead.
So my other point was just going to be really quickly that I don't necessarily think that Grubauer is going to stop starting. And that goes back to, I think he's the better goaltender for this team. And, you know, I'm not saying he's a better goaltender than Holtby overall, though I think it's probably a lot closer than people think. I just think that, you know, with Grubby, he's so long, he covers the bottom of the net, you know, potentially things could start sliding in another direction very quickly. But I really think that we could finish the season with Grubauer as a starter. That would not surprise me. And, you know, Holtby's making his money, you know, it's not a bad thing for either of them, you know?
Yeah, I totally agree. Like, what I'll throw out there is that Grubauer's faced a little over 2,000 shots in his career. I think he's like around like 2,300, 2,400. And he's a .924 goalie in that time, which is excellent. Braden Holtby has faced more than 10,000 shots. And he's a .920 goalie in that time. And prior to the season, hold on a second, I can verify this super fast. He was a .922. So he was a .922 save percentage on just south of 1,000 shots before the season, 10,000 shots before the season. Now he's at .920. So I think with 2,000 shots under his belt, we have a good idea that Grubauer's pretty damn above average. With Holtby at 10,000, and off by 4 shots every 1,000 to Grubauer, we know that Holtby is literally an elite goalie, right? Like he's in the top 10 percentile, you know, top 10% goalies in the NHL of the last decade. And he's getting up there in years. He's is he 30 yet? No, he's 28. But he still has a number of really good years ahead of him. And Grubauer should, you know, like maybe he'll be Seattle's number one goalie, or maybe he'll be traded to Carolina. I mean, he could have put Carolina in the playoffs. He could have put Carolina a new coach and Grubauer could have put the Carolina Hurricanes in the President's Trophy. But, I'm with you. I don't think it'd be surprising, if they ride Grubby out. That seems like something that Trotz would do. It sort of lines up with like that sort of like punitive, restorative, healthy scratching they did of Verana to take credit for it after the fact. Let me ask you this though, because this is something that it's tough to cover in like an article, but we know a little bit more about it, so we could talk about it a little more casually. Mitch Korn had been the goalie coach for a handful of years, and he essentially went to semi-retirement over the summer, essentially because he didn't want to travel as much. Can you tell me what his role with the team has been from last summer up until now, and how it's changed, if at all, in the last couple weeks?
Yeah. So from my understanding is that he went into more of a director's role of the goaltending coaches. So everyone basically reported to him. From what I've been told, he actually was working a lot with the Hershey guys. And so about a few weeks ago, I would say, when things kind of started going south with Holtby, he started coming back into his day-to-day role as a goaltending coach, from what I understand. So that's pretty much how that's changed.
Is he in DC now, you think, or is he like, or
yeah, I think, yeah, absolutely. I think he is.
That's good. And like, what was it? Was it from the Road to the Winter Classic when they had the freaking genius, super charming Mitch Korn segment where like he brings like his entire wardrobe with him because he doesn't want to like have an extra night. Like he seemed like he was a very fastidious traveler, and the home life suits him better. And anyway, I think spending some time with Holtby will be wonderful for him. I think we're in a good situation in that, even if it's, you know, painful and Facebook comments are toxic. But overall, I'm okay with it. And on that point,
wait, I have one more thought. I just remembered too. I said one thing that I'm kind of concerned about is that people are going to start blaming Holtby for the losses in previous years. Have you noticed that people are starting to blame him a lot more?
I think that there's only one that I think could possibly be anywhere close to a plausible argument, which is the most recent Pittsburgh series. But I think more so than that, Matt Murray and Marc-Andre Fleury, because Fleury played in that series as well. Pittsburgh goalies were the reasons why Pittsburgh won that series. And the thing about the Capitals is when they lose the playoffs, with the exception of the Tampa Bay series in 2011, they lose with agonizing, grueling closeness. It is a razor's edge. And when it's that close, everything is the decisive factor. It's like, not a political aside, but the 2016 election was very close. And if you want to say that X factor was the deciding factor, you probably have a good case for it, just because the margin came down to a couple of 10,000 people in two states. So anything that could possibly move a couple of 10,000 people in a few states, that's the thing that decided the election. And there's probably 50 of those things. So yeah, if you want to say Holtby won or lost something, I don't know how he could have done better against, you know, there was a couple of series against like Boston and New York, which were, Boston was him. Those were amazing series. I don't know. I think it's silly. And there's also this thing that like Holtby's giving up soft goals, and it's just entirely unsupported by evidence. If you look at Holtby's, like where the goals have been coming from since the beginning of the year, I would say there's two, maybe three, that have come from areas where like, oh, I really should have had that. Everything else was either super ridiculously up close, you know, like the scoring, the home plate scoring area, or a deflection or tip up front or a screen. Like, and that's not to say we should litigate and excuse or qualify every single goal against, but I'm saying that if you're saying he's been lending up soft ones or weak ones, I think that what I'm hearing is he's living up goals that are like deflating to the confidence of the team. And I certainly agree with that.
Yeah.
Shall we move on?
Yeah, I think we should.
Topic two of the day is the contract extension, details unspecified, for general manager Brian McClellan. Brian McClellan took over for George McPhee back in, let's say, 2014, I think. Promptly reinvigorated the defense with Matt Neskin and Brooks Orpik, and then got some top line scoring talent and Mike Weber and Tim Gleason. But and then this summer happened, which was not terrific. I guess I'll say this, and I don't think that my opinion is shared by everybody, because I am deeply ambivalent about the contract extension for Brian McClellan. I don't think it was at all a bad decision, and I don't necessarily think it was a good decision either. I guess here's the deal. The team got absolutely manifestly better since Brian McClellan became general manager. The roster talent, the contracts were excellent. The young players started maturing. Those were good deals. And bringing in TJ Oshie was amazing. And Matt Niskanen has been a revelation. But at that same time, a lot of the younger players that got good were players that predated him, that predated Brian McClellan.
And they were slam dunks, too.
Yeah. Your Burakovskis, for example. And I'll say that up until this season, it is inarguable that Brooks Orpik had been a net positive for the Washington Capitals. But I think last summer, and my opinion has been moderated a bit in the last few months, but I would say last summer was one of the worst off seasons that the Washington Capitals have had, and was probably in the bottom five of any franchise's off season in the NHL last summer. I would say Vancouver is worse because every season for them is somehow worse than the one before. Somehow Edmonton got worse. Carolina with the Darling thing. I think that was a gamble that they goofed up on, and Florida for damn sure with losing Marchessault and Riley. Are they the ones that went too?
Well, Marchessault, that was crazy.
Right, Riley Smith was the other. Maybe so. Like, I mean, that's like 125 points that they let Florida have as a gift. That let Vegas have as a gift. Anyway, like, I think that the Capitals had just an atrocious offseason that there's no excuse for. I think that it was obvious what they goofed up on. And what I think is discounted right now, and perhaps shouldn't be, is the enduring suffering that the Oshie and Kuznetsov deals will bring to the Capitals even after Alex Ovechkin's time is over. And unless those players have some, you can make both those contract successes if they have complementary players on cheaper contracts. But I'm not sure if you can afford those sort of supplementary players, because so much of that money is being eaten up by your underperforming top liner, your top sixers. And TJ Oshie's season has been a nightmare. Kuznetsov has done really good on points generation, but I don't think he's got the support to do it in and out. Pat made a good point a couple days ago that the most recent iteration of the second line, which I think is Kuznetsov, Oshie, and Verana, has shown some promise. But I think that it's really, really obvious to me that the Oshie contract is going to end in tragedy. The Kuznetsov contract will be costing more than it brings in before too long, if they don't have reinforcements coming. And then there's Orpik, who should have been bought out last summer. We could see the same thing with Carlson happen. Carlson's putting up points like a madman, but I really don't think he's the one driving the bus. He's got some scary defensive issues that I said in the snapshot are no better than Brooks Orpik's are. He just makes up for it with more offense. And if Carlson gets one of those monster contracts, that's going to be another albatross around the team's neck. Anyway, I'm with the argument. The other argument, it will refer to our final point of this podcast conversation, which will be about the coach. But what do you make of the Brian McClellan extension?
Well, I think there's a lot of dysfunction in the organization from the owner down. And I don't know how much is whose responsibility. But I mean, if you read the tea leaves, it doesn't seem like the team wants Trotz here. So why is Trotz here? And that's one thing that I've been trying to get to the bottom of. I look at Brian McClellan in a couple of different ways. I really love the fact that he landed two defensemen. I mean, if you look at the analytics, they're pretty solid guys. For what he gave up, they're solid guys. But then you're like, well, if you're not going to bench Orpik or actually take out the problems, why are you wasting more assets to not really have that much of a net improvement? So there's just so many things that happen that I just don't understand. The Oshie deal, you look at the salary is really good, but then, you look at the term is insane, and you look at his year before, and it's, the bloggers, the new media people put it out there that, look at his shooting percentage. You assume that they have analytics guys in-house that are like, this is likely not going to happen again. And they still just move forward with these deals. The Kuznetsov thing, I think you're missing the broader problem, is that they didn't give him a long-term contract when he wanted it 2 years before. They gave him that bridge contract, and then they had to pay out the butt to keep him here when he used the KHL as leverage. The same problem could happen with Andrei Burakovsky. So they just don't extend guys early enough. Some that are just kind of completely obvious that they're going to be long-term Washington Capitals. You look at the Carlson thing, I'm definitely frightful of that. And a lot of the good things that have happened there are because of McPhee. So, I'm not really sure what to make of Brian McClellan. I think he makes a lot of good deals at times, but then you have the albatrosses like the Orpiks, and then they can't defend it. And, I think that's the thing that bugs me, is just so much dysfunction. I mean, everyone knows what the argument's going to be against some of these guys from, like, let's say bloggers and stuff, and the team still can't defend it. Like, you look at Orpik. Everybody wants him benched. They will not bench him. Why? There's so much going on, and you just have to wonder, sometimes I wonder if it's a penny pinching thing from above, why is Trotz here if there's all these leaks going on that Reardon's going to be the next coach. You know, I don't completely get it, you know, and the only two people above Brian are Ted Leonsis and Dick Patrick. And you kind of have to wonder what kind of influence they have. They have absolutely no, you have no idea what their impact on the team is because they have absolutely no media presence now. So, you know, it's a ton
of media presence. He just doesn't talk about hockey decisions.
He doesn't, no. And he doesn't really talk about day-to-day stuff. And so, you know, a lot of that stays private. So I'm with you. It's like, you know, yeah, the team's been good lately. But this team is very dysfunctional. I mean, when people kind of projected this team, they're like, they're still going to be a really good team. And they have been, but I actually think that, you know, they have been in terms of standing points, but they've been one of the worst teams in the league in terms of underlying play. And I don't think that can be discounted. I think that there's been a lot of pain. And I think a lot of that pain has come from the dysfunction of McClellan and Trotz and whatever else is happening there. And, you know, it's weird because I'm kind of rooting for the team to miss the playoffs because I want change to happen. There should have been change last year. And so kind of waiting for it.
There was change last year. They got worse.
Well, there was change last year, but there wasn't a philosophy change. They just tried to keep the team as close as it was from before as possible.
Yeah, they tried to jam a ruler into the windowsill to keep the window open longer.
Exactly. And that wasn't really, you know, I don't think the fans really were jazzed about that. You know, the team has suffered for it. You know, I think a lot of that is Brian McClellan. And so him getting re-upped, it seems silly to me. But, you know, Ernie Grunfeld, he's still here as the Wizards GM, right? I mean, this is like a retirement job in the organization, you know? There's so much turnover in Monumental, but yet the GM can, like, you know, lay out at the beach and never be nervous, you know? So I don't know.
So like I said about, like, the goalie market, we just didn't know what was happening. I think we have a similar situation with the front office and coaching staff and leadership in the hockey, in the Caps organization. In that, like, it's opaque. We don't know who's doing what. Like, we hear murmurs about this and that, you know, like, okay, so, like, Barry Trotz predated Brian McClellan.
He got hired by Leonsis and Dick Patrick.
And so when McClellan took over, if McClellan's position was working as it should, he should have higher firepower over a coach. Although I would assume that that would be the kind of thing that be run by the president of hockey operations, which is Dick Patrick. If McClellan firmly believed that Trotz should be removed from his position either last summer or in November when the team was really bad around Thanksgiving or right now, and he failed to build that consensus and make his case for that, I accept it as a lowered responsibility for him, but it's still a failure. If I saw a problem and I didn't try to convince my superiors of that problem and a possible solution for it, it's still my fault. It's just a fault that I have some excuses for. I have shelter against criticism for it.
That's a good point.
I also think that Brian McClellan signed Brooks Orpik's contract and therefore he's less likely to buy out Brooks Orpik's contract. I think that one of the most successful patterns of a relationship between a manager and a coach is identifying the bad habits that a coach has, like regarding a single player or something, and then taking those toys away when it's not working. I think that we've seen that. I think we've seen that in, like, Chicago with Quenneville losing a player that should have been a fourth line. It's all escaping me now, but when we see these sort of, like, recurring, oh, you know what, it's a freaking chapter in Moneyball too, in the movie Moneyball, where, you know, there's a first baseman that they don't want to play, that they went out of the game, and so the GM Billy Beane just moves a player rather than ordering the manager to not play him, which is not something you could do. I don't know. I like you said, I think there's dysfunction, and I think that we'll never have an authoritative understanding of what's happening inside the organization because we don't have transparency, but we do have statements, you know, like a body of literature from not necessarily Patrick, but more from Leonsis. I remember years and years ago, this is almost a decade at this point, that Leonsis gave his 10-point plan for rebuilding a hockey team. And one, well, I'll read from this Leonsis thing. Here it says, ask yourself the big question. Can this team, as constructed, ever win a championship? If the answer is yes, I'll skip that part. If the answer is no, then plan to rebuild. Don't fake it. Really do the analytics and be brutally honest. It would be absolutely maddening for the Capitals to say that they can win a championship as currently constructed. They are a bottom 10 team by a lot of metrics. They're a bottom 5 team by a bunch of better metrics. And they're a decent power play. They're a pretty mediocre penalty kill. And the fact that they've won their, that they have the record they have right now is mostly inexplicable. And it's not something that they can bank on in the playoffs. They could certainly get lucky in the playoffs, but I doubt that because I'm a Capitals hockey fan. And I've seen it not happen. They need to make a change. And the cost of not making a change is doing exactly what they have in the past, making it one or two rounds, then flaming out. The possible benefits of making a change are massive. And I hope that Brian McClellan, now that he's got this sort of job security, feels empowered to actually make this move, which I guess at some point I've jumped from talking about Brian McClellan to Barry Trotz. So let's talk about Barry Trotz now. The Capitals should fire. The Capitals should fire Barry Trotz. Go, Ian. What's the thing about Brian McClellan you want to get to?
I wanted to just recap one thing, is that I think McClellan's biggest failing has been the minors. Just the way how none of the guys have developed this year. There's nobody. Riley Barber has over 20 goals, but he doesn't look like a prospect, yeah. At least in my eyes. So they don't have anyone. I don't want to say that the entire prospect board is barren, because you have Ilya Samsonov, but they're not in the organization technically right now. And you have Lucas Johansson, who could probably jump up at some point. I don't think Bowie has been good. I think he needs a lot more AHL seasoning. Juice has been good. He's been a surprise, but I don't think that's because of Hershey. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I just think the development in Hershey has been awful. From what I hear, it is a two-lane road or two-way road there. And I just think there needs to be a lot of changes with development, because something is really wrong there. I mean, you have two full years where you don't call up anyone. And then this year, when you need it, you know, I know they brag about having four rookies in the lineup. Okay, yippee. You know, Bowie was bad. You know, that should not be a point of pride for the team. Yeah. It should be the opposite. So
I'm excited to see, like, see more out of like Travis Boyd, to see Lucas Johansson get some time. I think Madison Bowie needs to go back in the oven to cook some more. But you're right. And yes, that's a management thing. But to be honest, that's also like a manager can request a budget, but that's also something that, like, the director of hockey operations has to get involved in, because that goes to scouting budget. And there's no better way. You get a huge return on investment if you've got a bunch of scouters doing independent peer review, and you validate the information that you get out of them. You keep it quantifiable. You will get a return on investment. Even if you're spending $500,000 on your scouting budget, you will get that money back from a player that's a diamond in the rough. The thing is that the Caps have had those diamonds in the rough, and they've all left the organization. Matthew Perreault may have the best chance in the West Coast, on the Western Conference, to win a Stanley Cup this year. The Caps gave him away for a song. Nate Schmidt, I think I've spoken about him once or twice. I don't need to repeat that. He was an undrafted player that the Capitals found, and he's no longer with the organization. Like, those are things that a good talent evaluation team would not allow to happen. Why? Well, one of those predates Brian McClellan. It was a George McPhee thing. And in many ways, I could see that letting Marcus Johansson, who's an unappreciated player on a decent contract, go because you overpaid for two other contracts. That's a failing by Brian McClellan, but that's also a thing where, like, if you have a meritocratic, egalitarian, independent talent evaluation and scouting group, you would be hard pressed to make that argument. Same thing with Matthew Perreault, same thing with Nate Schmidt. Like that, those are players that you really got to hold on to. And then instead, we have expiring UFAs that get signed to lifetime contracts. That's insane. That's wild. That's buck wild. That's bananas. That's where I'm at.
Yeah, I feel you. I think you should go to that next point now.
Barry Trotz. So today is Sunday when you and I are speaking in, and I wrote my Sunday snapshot, which, you know, I was mostly just talking through the numbers like they normally are and what's going on with Jay Beagle, what's going on with Matt Niskanen, and so on and so forth. But at the end, my sweeping conclusion diagnosis was that there's enough independent things happening where there's evidence of a pattern of deflated play that aren't isolated to a couple of players. And for that reason, the Capitals should fire their head coach, Barry Trotz. Yes, it took me a couple extra weeks to get to this conclusion than Kevin Klein over at Japers Rank did before. But I feel like back in November, I wrote like a 20 games in article that said, hey, the Caps need help in their defensive depth and they need help on their fourth line. If obviously the deadline's passed, and even if they had just targeted those two things, they would not have gotten the results they need, because it's really clear that John Carlson's struggling, independent of Brooks Orpik and Jay Beagle, that Matt Niskanen's having a scary off year, that the third line, which was one of the best lines in hockey last year with Lars Eller, Rick Connolly, and Andrei Burakovsky, is bleeding chances more than anybody on the Capitals. Those things are,
that makes no sense,
anomalous as hell. And it's those, when you have something that it's touching every player on the ice except for Alex Ovechkin's goal scoring, then you need to make a change to the way that the ship's being run. And there are times when being cynical about hockey is something that's bad, but you would be naive to think that Barry Trotz is going to change his bench handling with 14 games to go in his fourth season as the Capitals head coach. He's not going to start trusting young players. He's not going to bench his veterans. He's benched a veteran exactly one time in his time here, and it was on TV. It was such a big deal with Jason Chimera before the Winter Classic that one year. Like, this is not a pattern of behavior. This is a bad habit of behavior, and we can't expect him to change. So the Capitals have to change him. There is no penalty to losing Barry Trotz right now. There is, you know, a couple of days of chaos, but Todd Reirden's been there for a long ass time. Todd Reirden should be instated as interim head coach for the remainder of the season and the postseason, and the Caps should reevaluate in the summer. It's really that simple, because what's going to happen if they keep going like they're going? They're going to make it one, two rounds into the playoffs, 90% likely, and then they'll get eliminated. If they make a change, the worst thing that happens is those same results. They're not going to miss the playoffs. And unlike you, I don't think they should miss the playoffs. I think we should always root for them to make the playoffs. And I think it's a long shot for them to miss it. I mean, I think I would say it's like 1 in 100 chance. But I think it's, I am buried. I'm crushed under the weight of evidence that Barry Trotz's coaching tactics have begun to flag. And the depressed performance by this team is not going to magically get better in the last 14 games in the postseason. The end.
You know, I think your argument is 100% right on. I don't necessarily, my feelings are different, but it doesn't mean I don't feel as strongly as you. Like, I don't think that something recently happened and wow, Barry is, I think my moment where my insides died for Barry was it game five where they 70. Put Mike Weber Mike Weber in over Nate Schmidt, and I was like, he just doesn't get it, period.
That was the same thing. That was the exact same. I mean, that's the same, it's a different symptom of the same disease,
and it keeps repeating. It's just like he doesn't understand what wins sometimes, I guess. I don't know.
I don't understand why. Like, you don't need to be an analytics dork to like Nate Schmidt or Jacob Vrana or Andrei Burakovsky. And when those players have been given a chance, they did excellent. Like, Nate Schmidt had a great playoffs last year. Andrei Burakovsky got to the top line at the end of the playoffs last year and scored a butt ton of goals. Mike Weber was, I mean, like you could hang a loss on Mike Weber alone from a couple seasons back. Like, but, and then they went 7D last year out of nowhere.
Oh God, that made me so mad. Like, this is like, these are the things that have happened in the past where I was already there. You know what I mean? And I think you probably felt the same way in a lot of ways where I've kind of been there the whole way. I don't think he, like this team, like it's a razor thin margin to win. And he has tendencies that hurt the team and make them not as good. And if your head coach is sabotaging the team at times, no matter how much of a family atmosphere it is, keeping him there is not helpful. You know what I mean? Yeah. And I think the other part of it is that I think Barry is living in a world of 5 to 10 years ago where I think he tries to shield himself from criticism. And, you know, with a goaltender, you can kind of explain away the things better because while analytics have gone a long way, you know, goaltender is a really subjective position still. It's a feeling. It's confidence. It's things that are hard to understand. So when he explains why Holtby should sit, that really tailors to his style with the media. But when you get to forwards and defensemen, I think analytics have come so far. I don't think that he's shown any interest in it at all, judging by that one interview he did with NBC Sports Washington, the Junkies, where he tried to explain the shot quality thing that Alan May still hazes him about during intermission some nights. I just don't think he gets it. And, you know, he's living in the past. He's trying to defend himself constantly instead of maybe doing, maybe looking at how he can be a better coach, how he can put the best lineups out there, how he can be a catalyst for change. I think he's stuck on, this is how I do things. You know, people aren't going to go after me about Brooks Orpik because he's a veteran and he hits hard and, you know, he's a stay-at-home defenseman. And I don't think he understands that, you know, stay-at-home defenseman, the only defenseman worse in the NHL than Brooks Orpik is Dion Phaneuf. And how does Dion Phaneuf get traded? Like, how does one team want Dion Phaneuf? It's the same mentality. People do not understand how poor of players these guys are. And it's just this mentality that is pervasive. And I have been done with Trotz for, I guess, 2 years. And, you know, the thing is that when you say it's as simple as putting Reardon in charge, you know, frankly, I think Reardon's probably almost already in charge. So I don't see what that difference would be. And, you know, it's going to look bad across the NHL to fire Trotz, A, this late, B, he's won. I mean, if you look at the wins, regardless of the context, he's still won a ton of games. He's one of the most winningest coaches in the NHL. Again, the context, even though he had a basically free ticket in Nashville for 15 years because they loved him, you know, it's still going to look bad. I could see the team going either way, ignoring it or whatever. But if it hasn't happened yet, I don't see why they would do it now. And that is my opinion. And I am completely over this iteration of the Capitals right now.
This is stupid because we agree, but we disagree about why we agree. And so now we're going to argue instead of arguing about like whether the Caps should fire Trotz, which I think we both agree, like they should do it. And I think we both agree it's unlikely that they will, which maybe you know, speak to like our pessimism or cynicism about the team. But what I'll say is that Trotz had things that he did that were annoying in the past. And I am a fan of some of the players that I thought that he gave short shrift to. But on balance, I don't think that he was a net minus to the team then. I think that that has changed as his available roster has changed. And a lot of the season's downturn, I think you can pin really squarely on Brian McClellan's mishandling of the offseason. But even those players that are untouched by those changes are having big struggles. So what I'm seeing is a change from what I'm seeing is like systemic depression in the team's performance. And yeah, there's like the Orpik stuff. But if tomorrow they said, hey, we're gonna rest Orpik for a week and we're gonna stop using Jay Beagle exclusively in defensive zone just because he wins 6% of faceoffs. That's not going to do it. They need to have a tactical overhaul. And there has been a tremendous history of successful late season coach changes. Not maybe super late season. This would be about as late as that one Devils change. But to
play devil's advocate, would Todd Reirden be that change?
The thing is, it doesn't matter. You don't know. I don't know. And let me get back to that in a second. No, you totally derailed my line of thought. So I'll answer that now.
Instead. Oh, sorry.
Let's see what I was talking about. No, it's gone. That's fine. So it doesn't matter if Todd Reirden is better or worse, because the team has a hard ceiling as they're currently constructed. So let's say that Todd Reirden takes over and he's a complete disaster. He will be a complete disaster for 14 games plus a maximum of 14 more. And then he's out because he's an interim coach. Or they could be rewarded by having him say, all right, we're going to be a little bit more aggressive on a defensive zone. I'm sorry, an offensive zone faceoff loss. And we're going to use these lines in these contexts. And we're going to use a 37-year-old defenseman who's been a stay-at-home player for the last 10 years, less than 20 minutes a night. Those are reasonable things that the Caps could and should do, but would not do under their current coaching. And I'll say that I think that we're constructing it too narrowly. We think of this as advanced statistics and analytics versus old school. I don't think it comes down to that. I think it just comes down to basic evolving and changing and accepting challenges to your beliefs as they are currently constructed, right? Like when I went into the season, I thought, okay, man, I know they took like a huge beating during the offseason, but if they just get their fourth line, if they get guys in the place that are better than Chiasson and Smith Pelly, they'll be fine. And maybe even Jay Beagle. And man, if they just get a depth defenseman or two, they'll be fine. But they did get depth defensemen. And frankly, some of those, Chandler Stephenson has been pretty solid in the defensive.
He's been a revelation. Yeah. Absolutely.
But the coaching is still limiting their ceiling. And to be honest, like we could say all this stuff and then the Capitals could win 3-4 rounds of the playoffs. That could happen because it's what we're talking about is not what we're saying is not prophecy. These are all, probabilities and we're going abstract here, but the Caps are less likely to advance past where they were last year when they were a dominant team, and 2 years ago when they were even more dominant. Like the Capitals are less good than they were and therefore less likely to go further than they did, but that doesn't mean they won't. So accepting that sort of like probabilistic framework of it, I think the Capitals could be greatly rewarded by making a change to that source of decision making. And I don't know if Todd Reirden will be more open to having contrasting information. I saw the same problem with George McPhee years and years ago, where he said that the decision to bail on Forsberg was unanimous, which is obscene to me.
Scary.
But being able to hear the dissenting opinion and then reevaluating your own decisions should be a core competency of a head coach or a general manager. And until we see that happen, it doesn't surprise me that
with Reirden is that he perhaps would be more likely to work with McClellan, because Trotz may feel, a little bit of a, Trotz may be feeling like he's really reporting to Dick Patrick and Ted Leonsis and not necessarily McClellan, since those are the people that hired him. So maybe there's a better rapport with, Brian and Todd, and they may have a different philosophy than the dysfunction that's happening right now. I agree. I'm pessimistic. It's painful because I'm the most wildly optimistic person ever.
No, I know. I don't know that. You're a grump lately.
I am a grump. And I think there's just a lot of things culturally with the Capitals that are not good beyond even playing and winning and coaching. And I just think that the team needs to have an honest evaluation of themselves from top to bottom, because I think they might have been in first place for most of the season, but their underlying play was one of the worst. Season ticket holders are really mad. Are they delivering, you know, on, you know, they did for that stadium series game. I don't know how much that was NHL, how much that was Capitals, but you know, I don't think it was a sellout. So I think there's a lot of things going on, and I'm very pessimistic about the team. I think there needs to be an honest evaluation. And the sad part is that, you know, there was a time where I just thought that, you know, just with Ovechkin, they would break through. And, you know, my, you know, you have given me such a great understanding of hockey through your analysis, you and Pat and, you know, Neil, when he was on the team back in the day. And, you know, you guys have given me an understanding that it's such a random thing. And, you know, the playoffs are so random, anything could happen.
Did you see Neil's Throne of Lies article?
No, what did he do?
Oh, so in the Washington Post, Neil's like, the Capitals are atop the Metro, but they sit upon a throne of lies, and it's some of the arguments that we've been writing in Japer's Ring, but like it was a very good sassy thing, and like he and JJ, and as much as I like disagree with JJ about like analysis, I really enjoy like especially his podcast with Tark. I enjoy the hell out of it. Like I'll pause it and go like to Eileen if she's in the car listening to me. I'm like, I disagree because of this and this, and then I'll hit play again. And Eileen just rolls her eyes, but like it's an entertaining thing. And Neil sort of razzing JJ about like shot quality has been entertaining as hell, and his pessimism. Anyway, that's you were awesome. Saying,
yeah, I have an understanding that if they put Grubauer in and Grubauer stops more high danger shots than Braden Holtby, and Grubauer stays in net, you know, that could really change things. You know, if they fire Trotz, that could have a huge change that we don't fully comprehend or could know. So there's a lot of little things really that could happen.
So the thing about Grubauer, like there's a halo effect, right? Like you were talking about like cultural and philosophy. You were saying that a second ago. And what I think what ends up happening is that the way we think of the team's culture, the team's philosophy is a reflection of the team's record rather than the other way around. And that the Caps are stinking up the joint to a big level right now. And then as a result, we're like, well, the culture must be a losing culture. If Grubauer starts shutting out, you know, in and out games all the time, we're going to start thinking like people will be like, look at my snapshot Fire Trotz article. And they're going to go, that's silly. And they'll do the same thing to Kevin's article on Jaber's Ring a couple weeks ago. Like, look at you guys. You were so pessimistic. Now we're winning and the team's great. And I think we'll find that like what follows, what we think is leading the way is perhaps following. I don't know.
I have one other thing to say
down on the team right now. Sorry,
yeah, and I think one other thing that we've communicated this, but I think it's worth saying every time. I think this has been Alex Ovechkin's best season ever, just because look at the team around him, and look at his age, and yet he's still gonna be very close to 50 goals. I just think that it's a shame for him. You know, for all the crap that he took during his career. You know, now that I've met him a few times and kind of in that world a little bit, you can see what kind of person he is. And he's just, I remember when I met him, he just made fun of me the whole time. I did not expect that. He was asking, how many page views do you guys get? I was like, why are you asking me that? And I was like making fun of him. Like, I just think that I feel bad for him. I felt bad for him when Russia won. You know, he put on a, you know, he's like, yay, Russia won, or whatever, Olympic athletes of Russia or whatever. But I just feel so bad for him because it just seems like he takes so much crap for this team. And if they never win, he's going to be that guy that, you know, will hold on to that boogeyman forever. But I think you and me will remember that, you know, you had Adam Oates, you had
Dale Hunter,
you know, sometimes Dale Hunter, you had Barry Trotz making some sabotaging moves in the playoffs, 7D against the Penguins for some reason, Mike Weber and for Nate Schmidt, you know, all those little things you know, they start taking a chunk out of you. And if there's razor thin margins against really great teams, you will lose. And I think the other thing that was against them during those times too, were they were the number one team. So teams knew that they were good. They knew they had to give their best. I think this year, if the Caps kind of get in a first or second wild card spot, they kind of just get in. I think teams won't take them as seriously. You know, if you have Grubauer in there, it's different. I don't want people to think that, like, I don't think anything is possible, because it would make sense for us to be this negative and them have such piss poor underlying play for them to go out and just make the finals for no reason. You know, that would just be the most hockey thing ever.
That could totally
happen. You know, Ovechkin will score 15 goals for the Ovi spot and they go to the finals. It could happen.
The Senators made the conference finals last year, and I wouldn't clean up my
they were horrible
with them.
Yeah, they're such bad. I know, you're like, how did they get it? Like, and you think about, like, the playoff seeding too. You know, like, yeah. Tampa Bay is like, it's kind of like a pot in points right now, and they're running away with it.
If they have to go against Boston in the first round or something like that, that's going to be whacked. I mean, that's like the Caps going against Pittsburgh last year. But man, like, the Caps could get Florida in the first round. That would be kind of. When was the last time the Caps put is Luongo? I mean, that'd be freaking cool as hell. Is Luongo done it? Anyway, all right. We've gone on long enough. Ian, any closing thoughts that you want to express in a haiku or some cane?
No, I will say one thing. A, thanks for everybody who watched the NBC4 feature. That was really cool. And there's been a really weird amount of RMB signs at games. Peter, I don't really? Know if you'd like notice this. Okay, so you know what? Remember when Tom Wilson got hit in the face with the puck and started skating off the ice? There was a kid sitting behind the Caps bench and held up an RMB sign to him as he's bleeding from the face. I was like, that is the greatest thing ever. I'm actually just going to have a random post where I'm just like, hey guys, thanks for the random signs you're making. Cool. This makes no sense. We're a blog. We're not the players. You should totally make them for the players, but if you want to make them for us, we'll love it, you know? But that's been one of the, you know, it's just been so many, you know, this has been in some ways a little bit of a down year, but, you know, the stuff with the blog just, you know, I never seem to be able to understand some of the things that happen. And I'm sure you feel the same way too.
It's a car that flies. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, that makes no sense.
Yeah. All right. Well, human beings, thank you for listening to the Plurred Cast. Thank you for our patrons for supporting the Pradcast. And we'll see you next time. Maybe we'll do one of these more before the lofts begin. Cheers, y'all.
Bye.
This has been Russian Machine Never Breaks, the podcast. But now it's over. Nothing to see here. Move along.